San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB, you can hear us on any device as the show airs, and these podcasts are all commercial-free on iTunes as well as iymoney.com. Now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a best-selling author, an accomplished marathon runner, a philanthropist, a lecturer, and a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing marvelous, Joe. I've been having a lot of fun watching Wimbledon.
Really?
Which is a perfect lead-in for this show.
Absolutely. I hope people are still showing up over there.
They are. Yeah, you can get some good deals.
But anyway, we thought we had other plans for a show this tonight, but with the advent of the Brexit movement and what's happening, and we want to assure people the sky isn't falling, but we want to get a little more information, background information, the impact, the political, social, economic, financial, all that. So the show is called It's Your Money and Your Life, and tonight it's mostly about money, and it's mostly about Richard. And on the phone we have from New York one of the chief analysts and strategists from UBS. He has over 20 years of experience as an equity analyst and chartered financial analyst. So if you know what that is, folks, that's one of the hardest credentials to get in the world. And from the University of Pennsylvania and Wharton School of Business. And he's been a guest before on the show from UBS, one of the biggest banks in the world. David Lefkowitz, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Happy to be here.
Outstanding. Well, Richard, why don't you fire away? You're the CPA, and people want to know what's going on with Brexit. Where do you want to start?
Well, David, first question, how surprised were you at the vote? Or surprised at all or not?
I think it was somewhat of a shock. I was actually here in the office watching the tape a bit as the votes were coming in, and when I was leaving the office, the pound was rising. It looked like the leave vote was going to lose, and then a couple hours later, obviously we got a very opposite result. So I think financial markets were very clearly positioned for the defeat of the leave vote. Mm-hmm. And that's why part of the reason why we saw so much volatility. So like most investors, we were also expecting the leave to lose. And obviously that wasn't the case.
But things have settled down now a little bit, correct? How are things looking, a few days out?
Yeah, it's been a seesaw. So we were looking at the S&P 500. It fell 3.5% on Friday, mm-hmm. another almost 2% on Monday, and then over the last 2 days, we've seen a pretty strong rally, and now stocks mm-hmm. are only down about 2% from where they were before the vote. So it's definitely been a big seesaw.
A roller coaster. Huh?
But David, just as some background information for some people who might not know what the EU is, and I think some of the voters who voted to leave don't know what it is, could you do some brief background explanation of what the EU is and why it's so important?
Sure. The EU, European Union, is essentially a political conglomeration of the independent states in Europe, and the whole idea here. And I think it's important to sort of rewind the clock a little bit and sort of get some historical perspective. After World War II, a lot of the European leaders said we need to put in institutions that will prevent this calamity from ever happening again after having been through two world wars mm-hmm. in pretty quick succession. Mm-hmm. So that was really the genesis of some of these institutions that eventually turned into the European Union. And the idea is that they wanted to try to bind all the countries together in a more legal way.
And to prevent too much financial imbalance, I guess, right?
I would say financial imbalance, but also, give the nations a forum to talk with one another. And I also think really increase the economic ties between all the member states. And so almost to prevent the calamities of early in the 20th century from repeating themselves.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say like an economic United Nations, so to speak, in a way?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think I think this is part of this whole other question of with the Eurozone and the common currency. Did they put the cart before the horse? But I think at the end of the day, it started off as kind of a peace project, and then it turned into a way to economically unify the continent, but it still is politically divided between all these different nation states.
Now, I did a little background reading recently, and it's kind of been a rocky road with the UK and the EU from the get-go. Apparently, Charles de Gaulle didn't care for Great Britain too much and wouldn't even let him in, the forerunner, correct?
That's right. I mean, the UK has always been a little bit separate and sort of has almost an asterisk next to its membership in the Union. Obviously, they never chose to adopt the euro, and they wanted to keep their own currency. In hindsight, now that actually is a good thing because it minimizes the amount of financial disruption because they have their own currency, and we're not talking about a breakup of the euro, which would be a lot more dramatic and violent.
But
I think it's a very fair point. They've always been a little bit separate than some of the other continental members of the Union.
And then how is this impacting the value of currencies over there? I think that's a big concern for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a pretty sharp fall in the pound sterling, and that has not rebounded, even though we've seen some stocks have rebounded both here and in Europe. Mm-hmm. The pound is still down a fair amount, 10%-ish or so. The euro down a little bit less. But the most dramatic and direct impact has definitely been in the currency markets.
Mm-hmm. And what about the banking system in the UK? What effects do we think we're going to be seeing?
Yeah, so the banks have really been bearing the brunt of a lot of the selling, in both here and in Europe. And I think there are a couple things to bear in mind. And the fact that interest rates are lower now makes it a more challenging environment for banks. It's just it's a harder environment to earn a spread and make money on lending, just because they're getting lower rates on those loans now. And also there was some thinking in the UK that their central bank, the Bank of England, was going to begin raising interest rates, and that would have been good for the banks over there. And now that looks like it's going to we could go into reverse and start cutting rates, and that may not be as good. And then obviously there's a lot of questions about the whole business model for UK banks. Will they have access to the European Common Market, and will they be able to service clients from London that happen to be European or Eurozone-based clients? And that's a big uncertainty at this point, and that's part of the reason why we've seen such carnage in the UK banking sector when it comes to the stock performance.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, this Article 50 has never been used. That's the exit clause, right, for any country wanting to exit the EU. And so, really, they technically have not left yet, right?
That's correct. They haven't left. I mean, this is a referendum, and then the government has to then trigger the Article 50. Now, the other thing is that I think part of what has exacerbated some of the volatility, uncertainty, is that there is right now somewhat of a leadership void in the UK. The current prime minister David Cameron, has announced that he will resign, and the governing party is looking for a replacement. The opposition party also is looking at a leadership change. So there's a lot of, not only do we not know, we have a lot of economic uncertainty, we now have a lot of political uncertainty on top of that, and that's just compounding things.
Kind of like here. But in any case, well, obviously we're coming up on a break pretty soon, but we want to know how this is going to impact the U.S. economy and our equities. We know that you've issued a UBS newsletter on this as well, and all the implications. And so you want to take our break now, Eric? Why don't we do that? We'll come right back with David Lefkowitz from UBS, chief strategist, right after this. Hang on. Boy, that's beautiful music, Richard, isn't it?
It is. I like the Clash better.
Yes, we're talking with David Lefkowitz from UBS, chief strategist, all about Brexit and the implications. And Richard had some questions, so go for it.
We had talked a little bit about banks, but how about real estate market in the UK and or outside of the UK? In other words, any possibility of a capital flight out of, shall we say, the UK over to other countries like the US?
Yeah, I do think that is something that we need to keep a close eye on. Obviously, the UK and London in particular was sort of seen as a global financial center and attracted a lot of capital globally. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that that is no longer going to be the financial center that it was, if the UK banks are going to have a significant amount of hamstrings in terms of how they operate and their access to the European common market, we definitely could see the appeal of London as a global financial center wane, and that could lead to some reductions in the amount of real estate demand, and there's been a lot of capital flows into that sector in London recently. So I do think there's some risk there.
Yeah. How about GDP overall with regard to the UK and the EU? Do you anticipate some kind of domino effect and some kind of downward trend?
So I think this is a key question, obviously, and I do think at this point we are going to see some fall off in economic activity in the UK. Businesses don't know the rules of the road at this point. Consumers aren't sure if they're going to be in the union or not, and there's a lot of political uncertainty, as we talked about. It wouldn't shock me to see some hit to consumer confidence as a result, and a little bit of pullback in consumer spending. So I do think we are going to look at a period of slower growth in the UK. Mm-hmm. And that has knock-on effects. It probably will impact the Eurozone a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the Eurozone is a much larger economy, and the domestic situation there is improving. So I think we're not looking at a recession for Europe. Mm-hmm. And then here in the U.S., we're kind of a third order removed from all of that. So the impacts here in the U.S. should be fairly modest. But we're still watching this, and I think it's important to see how businesses respond to this, and do they change any of their investment plans as a result.
And how important will Scotland's response to be this in terms of if they decide to go ahead with a referendum to succeed? Is that going to be of great importance or really not that significant?
I think it probably has bigger political implications than it does economic, but it's just another variable to throw into the mix of uncertainty. But it does seem like if we are talking about the UK exiting from the European Union, the Scottish seem like that's not something that they want to do. In fact, the voting there was heavily in favor of staying. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be shocking to see them think about leaving their union with the United Kingdom. And I think it's more political uncertainty and leads to potentially some dent to business confidence. But the implications beyond the UK itself are not that large, just mm-hmm. because it's a relatively small economy.
Right. Now, the whole EU, I saw some numbers. Their GDP is valued at about $18.5 trillion as of 2014, and I'm not sure where they are today. But as far as the U.S. economy and how this impacts us, you're saying it's not that going to impact us all that greatly?
I really don't think so. I think there's a couple things to bear in mind here. Trade to the United Kingdom is only about 3% of our exports, and export activity is only about 10% of our overall economic activity. So we're talking about a very small percent of total U.S. economic activity. Mm-hmm. If it has spillover effects on the European Union and their economy, that could have a slightly larger impact here. But really, we're probably not going to feel it very dramatically at all. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to think about, to also watch, though, do we see financial market contagion? And in other words, do we see stress in financial markets? And does that lead to a broader retrenchment of business spending more broadly? So far, we're not seeing that to any great degree at all. So that gives me a fair amount of comfort that the impact is going to be fairly small, as I mentioned. And I think it's important to also make one other point on this. We've had there have been a number of non-U.S., what I would call crises, over the years. And you can think about the Russian default in 1998. Mm-hmm. You can talk about the the Thai baht devaluation in 97, the Mexican peso devaluation in 94. I mean, there's a whole host of these things that have happened in the past, and they have never led to a U.S. recession. So I think it's important to bear that in mind, and that's because we are a very, what we call, closed economy,
right,
much more reliant on domestic activity than we are on foreign activity.
We can cause our own recession, thank you very much.
Exactly.
We don't need any help. But recording your report, you've got sectors broken down there: technology, consumer staples, energy, healthcare, consumer discretionary, and financials, and property REITs. Anything you're particularly robust on or cautionary on?
So I think the two sectors that look the most interesting here to us are healthcare and consumer discretionary. Healthcare has really derated. In other words, it's gotten cheaper over the last couple of years, primarily for those domestic considerations that you were talking about, that, you know, concern about restrictions on drug pricing, political noise coming out of the election related to that. And, you know, we don't think at the end of the day there's going to really be any change in the regulations around pharmaceutical companies, regardless of who wins in November. The earnings outlook still looks quite good. And, you know, if you're looking for defensive sectors and with interest rates very low, a lot of these large pharmaceutical companies pay very attractive dividend yields. That area is looking pretty interesting. The other area is consumer discretionary, where I think there's still a lot of pent-up demand for housing. That's a key driver of consumer spending going forward. Consumer balance sheets are in very good shape. Debt has been paid down. Interest rates are low. And wages are beginning to rise. So I think that's all a great backdrop for further gains in consumer spending. And here also, we've seen valuations have come down. So the risk-reward looks pretty attractive at this point.
There you go. Richard, follow up?
Yeah, question about immigration in the UK. I know the referendum might have been based in part on people's opinions about whether we should have open borders back, you know, over in Europe or not have open borders, and the effect on the UK and the job market that results from changing policies in immigration. Do you think that's going to cause unrest or affect the economy a lot if there's significant changes in terms of immigration policy?
I do think that having some restrictions, if there are restrictions on immigration, and it has the potential to impact just the level of wages, and it could mean it's harder for companies to find the employees they need, and you may not get a perfect matching of skills between job seekers and companies and those companies that are looking for jobs, and it may encourage, or looking for workers, it may encourage companies to think about domiciling their operations in areas that are more favorable to their ability to attract talent. So it is something that could be a wild card. What's interesting, though, is that even the leaders of this Leave campaign have really, you know, kind of changed their tune a bit about exactly how they feel about some of these key issues, and immigration being one of them, and access to the European common market being another one. So it's not clear there's going to be dramatic changes on the immigration front, but definitely something that I think in the end would actually just hurt the UK economy if this is not done in a thoughtful fashion.
There you go. One quick question. I think we're relatively insulated, the markets, with trading curbs or circuit breakers. Do you have any opinion on that, or do you have to reserve judgment?
Oh, in terms of
our own markets, with
mitigating volatility.
Correct.
Yeah, I think the fact that we have very deep capital markets with a lot of market participants, I think that minimizes the likelihood that we're going to see any type of so to speak air pocket that could lead to a real disruption. But you do occasionally get these periods when you do see more severe sell-offs, and yeah, there are circuit breakers in place to sort of a timeout to give everybody a rest and just kind of reassess the situation. But I think what's important to bear in mind is that we have some of the deepest and largest capital markets in the world, and if you look at over a long period of time, these things tend to work out.
There you go.
David,
we
have to take a break, but we really appreciate you taking time out of your evening
to chat with us. Thank you so much. Thank you, David Lefkowitz, UBS. We're coming right back with Alan Jin from USD. Hang on, we'll be right back. Money.